Reading this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 10, Texts 14 through 17. Chapter is entitled Divisions of Creation, and dialogue between Maitreya and Vidura. Vidura is on pilgrimage. We know this from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, as well as Mahabharata. Just before the Kurukshetra battle was to begin, Krishna went and made an attempt for a truce, a peace treaty, peace in our times. And Duryodhana completely rejected, and in fact, he insulted Krishna. Krishna left. And after Krishna left, Vidura stood up, the younger of the three brothers, but the wisest, wiser between himself and Dhritarashtra, and was accepted by everybody in the assembly as what he was. Greatly learned person, very, very wise. And he told Duryodhana, "Your behavior is despicable. Your incorrigible personality, and you're bringing ruin to your whole dynasty." He turned to Dhritarashtra. "By your silence, you're permitting. You're the elder. By your word, you could stop all of this. But you're being silent. And your silence is your blindness because of your attachment to this son of yours." And on and on. And Duryodhana exploded. "Get out of here." Insulting words. "Son of a kept mistress, you should be driven out of this kingdom with nothing but your breath of life. Get out of this royal assembly." Vidura understood, "I don't have any service to do here anymore. I tried to give wisdom and protection. There's no service remaining for me, so I'll just leave." And without saying a word, he didn't say anything. He just left. When he left, he took with him his bow and arrows and placed them by the side of the door and went out. Meaning, "I'm glad I don't have to make this decision of fighting on behalf of these people." because he was maintained by them, and by, same as Bhishma, he would have had to make this very difficult decision to honor that religious principle, those who he's being maintained by, to take up their position, or take up the position of what he knew was right. Anyway, so he left. He was on pilgrimage for 34 years before he came back, described in the 13th chapter, the first canto, he came back to deliver Dhritarashtra. So, two cantos later, the sages say to Sutta Goswami, Bhidhar was on pilgrimage. Where did he go? And you said that he met Maitreya. Ooh, that must have been a wonderful encounter, because Bhidhar is so great and Maitreya is so great. What did they talk about? What were their discussions? Please, describe all these things. So the canto opens with Vidura's pilgrimage and his the course of his long pilgrimage. He met many saintly persons, heard from them, and eventually it comes to the point where he's in a forest in Vrindavan, and there he sees Krishna speaking Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. And just after Krishna finishes Uddhava Gita, Krishna leaves the planet. That's it. There's no more chapters. He's gone. Before he left, Krishna told Maitreya, Vidura didn't hear the discussion. Maitreya heard the discussion. Krishna told Maitreya to, very soon Vidura will appear. He'll come here. And I'd like you to instruct him. You heard, now you instruct as you heard. He gave him some service. And when Vidura came into that forest and saw Uddhava, Uddhava, they had an all-night discussion, many chapters, and Vidura, Uddhava said, I have to go now, because Krishna gave me some service too. He told me to go to the ashram of Narayana Rishi. And as he had wanted, Krishna had wanted, as he appeared in this world, to give his association to his devotees, he hadn't made it there. He wanted Uddhava to go as his representative. That was his service. It was a trick. It was just like he gave him something to do to maintain and sustain his life. The separation from Krishna would have been very difficult, even just to maintain his life. So he gave him some service. And Maitreya's service was to instruct Vidura. So Vidura found Maitreya, and there's like four cantos worth of dialogue. And the sages asked the right question, because the subject matter discussed between these two is very elevated. It starts with the topic of creation. And according to the structure of the Vedic literature, there are Mahapuranas, Puranas, and Upapuranas. In the Mahapuranas, there's 10 subject matters. It must cover those 10 subject matters. And Srimad Bhagavatam is one of those. And so, in the second canto, chapter 10, first verse, is what those 10 subject matters are. And this is discussing two of those, specifically the verses we're covering in this chapter this morning. Sarga and Visarga are two of the ten. Sarga is the matter of creation as far as what Lord Vishnu does, this personality Godhead does. And Visarga is what the chief engineer, Lord Brahma, does, the firstborn living being, takes everything that that Lord Vishnu provided and assembles it. That's what engineers do. There's matter, there's the laws that govern matter, there's a plan to make something, and et cetera, et cetera. They put it all together. Sometimes they do research to understand what's this, what's the push and pull of cause and effect of laws of nature. Oh, there's a nice law of cause and effect, and God can put something else together. That's the research department. So, the section I just completed in this chapter 10 is really amazing. It's in order to have, it's time. Time isn't just like look at your watch and say, what's the, you know, it's 7:25 a.m. on such and such date. That's time. That's time. But it's a very, very small dimension of time. That what Vidura wants to know is, please tell me everything exhaustively about eternal time. And how do you even think of eternal time? Like, how do you think of infinity? Even the infinity sign. You know what an infinity sign looks like?
Yes.
You do? Wrong one. Like this, watch. You see what I'm doing? You see? So let me ask you, where does it begin?
Oh.
That's what it is. Where does it begin and where does it end? Like here's a piece of furniture. It begins over here and ends over there. Well, here's a drum. Begins over here and ends over here. What's this one? Where does it begin and end? Eternal time. It has no beginning. It has no end. Yeah. But that eternal time brought into the matter of creation then appears to be with a beginning and an end. And it's differently manifested according to the nature of the living entity, the guna and karma of the living entity. Or like, time is relative. The background of, so, demigod time, earth time, insect time, microbial time. There's a, I sent this out, somebody sent me, so I forwarded it to a number of people. Some Chinese mathematician did a little, like a Google map with time. Time and space. He starts way over at this end, you just move the cursor and it goes like this and like this and like this and time and then space. Just, can you go to, you know, like to like towards infinity on both ends. So, in other words, time acts differently. You know, we've all heard this description. Those that have read or heard Prabhupada. And our earthly time, 6 months of our earthly time is one day for the demigods. And the night for the demigods is another 6 months. So our one day, excuse me, their one day is our 1 year. Then we take our 1 year, and you go down to an insect. Their whole lifetime is perhaps 24 hours, or a week, or depending upon the living entity. So, and through that, they experience everything in their, you know, birth, growth, reproduction, dwindling, vanishing, and death. So, life cycle, life cycle, life cycle, life cycle. But it's just cycles of time, and it's relative. And it's described in the Bhagavatam, not just Einstein thought it up. It's described how in the background is time. And eternal time acts to move matter in relative degrees. You don't have events without time. You don't have material events without time. Anyway, so because the discussion is creation, he wants to know about time, because you're not going to have that event without time. What's the role that time plays in creation? So that's the section that's just completed. Now the section for this morning is, let me just say something. It's really fascinating. Lord Brahma offers prayers. He undergoes austerities for a long period of time. That the personality of Godhead appears, says many things. You please me by your nice prayers. You please me by your austerities, by your purpose. In your prayers, in his prayers, he asked for three things: the ability to carry out his service, something that applies to us. Although it's in the morning, it's after the night of, during the night of Brahma, there's a partial devastation, and in the morning he has to recreate that which was devastated. So he's done it so many times before, just like we get up in the morning and, you know, like brush our teeth or, you know, do something we do every day. He is not an ordinary living being. He doesn't just like go to the office and write a software program, or go to the office and do something. He recreates half the universe in detail. I mean, he's like Professor Brahma. He's super qualified. But he doesn't feel himself qualified without empowerment. Because that's part of his super qualification, the Lord's empowerment. So he prays for creative potency, capacity to carry out his service. He prays for protection from pride and thinking, I'm the doer. And he prays, the third thing is, he prays for the capacity to help living entities in this realm that he's creating that will suffer because of their forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord and their purpose of life. So they'll struggle, they'll suffer, and please give me the potency to relieve them of that suffering by imparting knowledge properly. So the Lord responds, gives him those empowerments in very unique, beautiful ways. So now he's beginning. And as he's beginning, the lotus upon which he's seated starts to expand through the whole dimension of the universe. That's still dark because there isn't a sun yet. And then he is empowered to take the subtle form of the planets and the various species and place them in various parts of creation. Now it's just subtle. It's like Prabhupada's comment about dinosaurs or anything becoming extinct. There's no question of extinction because that subtle form is there. So the gross form may be taken, but the subtle form is there. And that's what he does at the beginning every day. He places the subtle forms of things. And because the elements are there, the elements then nourish. It's like the seed of the father and the womb of the mother produces the child. So the seed is there and the womb of material nature provides the elements, because this, in other words, that's what Vishnu does. He provides the elements and then Brahma puts the elements together. That's the Sarga and Visarga. So the last verse that I covered was text 13. This cosmic manifestation is as it is now. It was the same in the past and it will continue in the same way in the future. That is to say, time is cyclical. Things come into being, stay for some time, go out of being, rest, come into being, go out of being, or stay for some time, go out of being, in the resting period. So whatever stage of that cycle, because time, the maybe picture of things is cyclical, it's just different phases of time. And the thing is in an immature stage, medium mature, fully mature, dwindling, just like, it just keeps happening. Cyclical. Therefore, the systematic activities of the time factor are perpetual and eternal and cannot be stated to be false. So now, this morning's topic is the categories of sarga. So what's sarga again? Sarga is what Lord Vishnu does. He takes things from an unmati. He glances upon pradhan. That pradhan means the total undifferentiated material energy, which is a reflection of his internal energy. So another name is Chaya Devi, a shadow or a reflection of his internal potency, Rama Devi. And he wants to give her something to do, because she wants something to do. But she's unhappy without something to do. So he gives her something to do just by glancing. But glance is very powerful. All living entities that are within the body of Mahavishnu are carried by his glance along with the time energy, and then things start to happen because time, the living entities, and their dormant karma and the material nature that's undifferentiated starts to differentiate. And what's the first element that separates out of the big warehouse? The undifferentiated totality of material energy? Our dear friend. False ego. And then false ego mixes with the three modes of nature. False ego in contact with the mode of goodness produces the mind, another dear friend. False ego in contact with passion separates out material intelligence. False ego in contact with the mode of ignorance separates out the five gross elements. So you take those and you have what Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita as the Bina Prakritir Ashtada, the eight separated elements, gross and subtle. So there's the five gross, earth, water, fire, air, ether, and the three subtle, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Krishna says, altogether these make up my separated energies, bina, separated. Bina prakriti, separated material energy. So that's what Lord Vishnu does. And then Brahma takes them and makes things according to the plan of the Lord. He has to know the plan. He has to know the laws. He has to have the creative impetus. He has to be self-realized. He has to understand what his purpose is. He can't make any mistakes in creation. That'd be a big problem. He has to know exactly. So, he's given the intelligence. Now, before it goes, the section that follows this one is what Brahma does. But this section, this morning, is the 9 categories of sarga. We can say it's one, because then they're just subdivisions of them. That's this morning's verse. There are 9 different kinds of creations. Besides the one which naturally occurs due to the interactions of the modes, that is to say, once sarga happens, visarga happens, the kind of creation that we know about, like building a house or building a city or having a family or, you know, getting an education, getting a job, those kind of things that we do all the time, a little sub-creation thing. But there, aside from those, there's 9 that Lord Vishnu does. Sargo nava vidhas tasya. There are 3 kinds of annihilations due to eternal time, the material elements, and the quality of one's work. Kala, prakriti, and guna. Kala, dravya, and guna. Purport. The scheduled creations and annihilations take place in terms of the supreme will. There are other creations due to interactions of material elements which take place by the intelligence of Brahma. Later these will be more explicitly explained. At present, only preliminary information is given. The 3 kinds of annihilations are, 1, due to the scheduled time of annihilation of the entire universe, 2, due to a fire which emanates from the mouth of Ananta, and 3, due to one's qualitative actions and reactions. So, the second one, well, the first one is, you know, the universe is over. That's at the end of the life of Brahma. Going down. At the end of the day of Brahma, there's a partial annihilation. And elsewhere it's described that it's very intelligent how, maybe if you want to partially destroy something, very intelligent. 100 years of drought. So everything becomes dry, really dry. And then from the mouth of Ananta, as mentioned, some fire at the bottom. Because that's where Ananta is. You put a little fire at the bottom and everything is dry. What's going to happen? Burst into flames. And everything is engulfed in flames up to and including the heavenly regions. So the lower planets, the Gaur, Bhuvar, and Svarga local planets up to the heavenly realm. It's in fire, on fire. Then above that, there's 4 more planetary systems. Maharloka, Jamaloka, Kapaloka, and Satyaloka. The residents in that Maharloka, it's so hot. It's described in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. They get in their vimanas and go to the upper realms. It's, you know, Tapaloka residents, oh, welcome. going to stay for a while because I understand it's too hot down there. And they stay for some time and then return. When it's the morning of Brahma again. But after that fire, first is drought, then fire, and then there's inundation. The flood, as described in the Old Testament of the Bible and as described in the Bhagavatam. There's a flood. And when the flood comes, everything gets dissolved. Like an Alka-Seltzer or something. Okay, we put a little tablet and fizz and it's like, where is everything? It's just dissolved. And then it dries. And then it's like ingredients everywhere. And Brahma takes those ingredients and puts them back together again. So that's the second due to a fire which emanates from the mouth of Ananta. And three, due to one's qualitative actions and reactions, that's like the little destructions that we do. They'll build something and knock it over. Put up another one. Something. Actions and reactions of the modes of nature. Now, that's the three types of annihilations. Now here's the nine types of creations. The first one is the creation of the Mahatattva, or the sum total of the material ingredients. So I briefly described how that happens. I'll just do it again, slowly. The personality of Godhead Mahavishnu is reclining on Anantashesh in the causal ocean. And he sees, this is the description found in Sri Brahma Samhita. He sees, he's enjoying with his internal potency. He sees at a distance the reflection of his internal potency and wishes to give her something to do because she wants something to do. So his glance, that reflection, is the pradhan, the undifferentiated totality of material ingredients, and by the glance, the pradhan becomes activated and things start to separate. And so the separated, the differentiated sum total material ingredients, that's what Mahatattva is. So the statement is he creates it, but actually it's eternal. Prakriti, energy, God is eternal, and the energy of God is eternal. See? The energy of God is co-eternal with him. As eternal as God is, his energy is also eternal. It may be in a undifferentiated, unmanifest state. It may be in a differentiated state. It may be in a created state. It may be in a annihilated state. But it's just different states of his energy. So he creates the Mahatattva. There's limitations of language, but that's how it's being described. Not like creates in the sense it didn't exist, some time passed, and God thought, hey, this is a good idea, let's create something. It's eternal, it's just different states. Of the first emanation from the Supreme Lord, for material creation is called the Mahatattva. The interaction of the material modes is the cause of false identification. So the capacity to have false identification comes first by false ego being manifest. But it doesn't act yet on the living entity until the living entity starts to, through the agency of false ego, identify with one or another combination of the modes of nature. That's called upadhi or designation. It's just an energy. It's just like hanging out. And then there's a living entity just hanging out. But if the living entity, through association, guna, sangha, through association with material modes of nature, wishes to enjoy material nature in a particular way, then subtle covering of false ego is awarded. You win the prize. You get to be covered by false ego, because otherwise you can't be the enjoyer of that which you're not entitled to be the enjoyer of. So here's a little false ego, and you can try to be the enjoyer. The interaction of the material modes is the cause of false identification, or the sense that a living being is made of material elements. This false ego is the cause of identifying the body and mind with the soul proper. Second, sarga, or creation. Material resources and the capacity and knowledge to work are all generated in the second term of creation, after the Mahatattva. So, he doesn't break it down here. Later on he'll do that. But it's, you know, what's the fruit of association with the mode of passion? What's the fruit of association with the mode of ignorance? What's the fruit of association with the quality of goodness? So one is goodness, knowledge, passion, activity, ignorance, destruction. So material resources, that's the dravya. That's manifested by the mode of ignorance. Remember, false ego in contact with the mode of ignorance produces the five gross elements. That's dravya. That's, you know, stuff. Separated, differentiated stuff, at least in categories. Capacity, passion, creative force. And in order to do creative things, you have to have some intelligence, material intelligence. So that's a word. And knowledge are all generated in the second term of creation, after the Mahatattva. Jnana, knowledge, indicates the senses which are sources of knowledge and their controlling deities. So there's knowledge and there's senses for acquiring knowledge, jnanindriyas, and then there's the controlling deities of those jnanindriyas, of the senses. It's going to be explained further. Work, that's the mode of passion portion. Work entails the working organs, or the karmendriyas, the senses for doing work, the arms and the legs, categories of five karmendriyas. And they're controlling deities. All these are generated in the second creation. Here's the third. The sense perceptions, or the objects of the senses. And from these, the elements are generated. The fourth creation is the creation of knowledge and of working capacity. The fifth creation is that of the controlling deities, by the interaction of the mode of goodness, of which the mind is the sum total. The sixth creation is the ignorant darkness of the living entity. by which the master acts as a fool. Purport. The demigods in the higher planets are called devas because they are all devotees of Lord Vishnu. Vishnu bhakta smrito daiva asaras tad vipariyaha. All the devotees of the Lord are devas or demigods, whereas all others are asuras. That is the division of the devas and the asuras. Devas are situated in the mode of goodness and material nature, whereas the asuras are situated in the mode of passion or ignorance. The demigods, or controlling deities, are entrusted with departmental management of all the different functions of the material world. For example, one of our sense organs, the eye, is controlled by light. Light is distributed by the sun's rays. And their controlling deity is the sun. Similarly, mind is controlled by the moon. All other senses, both for working and for acquiring knowledge, are controlled by the different demigods. The demigods are assistants of the Lord in the management of material affairs. So there's this management of material affairs has its big scale, but the big scale moves to the small scale or micro scale. The big scale is the sun provides light to the universe, and so we have life. Without the sun, we don't have life. At least we don't have life as we know it. Light is a life-giving element. But then, if I go to the micro scale, and a little insect or human being or bird or animal or whatever, we may have the instrument of the eye, but without light we can't see. So the demigod that's controlling our seeing, controlling meaning, providing or taking away, is the sun. Gyan, indriyas, etc. Later, in upcoming verses, it's going to go in detail. This is now just setting principles. In order to have creation, you have to have all these different parts. If you ever had a desire to create a universe, you're going to have to know how to put one together. There has to be these different elements. So this is the plan. Ultimately, the sanction of the Lord, where you can't even, you know how it goes together, you can't make one. After the creation of the demigods, all entities are covered by the darkness of ignorance. Each and every living being in the material world is conditioned by his mentality of lording it over the resources of material nature. Although living entity is the master of the material world, he is conditioned by ignorance, by the false impression of being the proprietor of material things. We're not the proprietor of material things. Here's some proof. Like that, whatever you have can be taken. And you can protest. Wait a minute. It doesn't matter. Like that, it's taken. You're not the proprietor. But one goes, even knowing that, one goes on thinking, I'm the proprietor. And that's what is described in Bhagavad Gita as the spirit of the asura. So much is mine, I'm perfect, powerful, and happy, and I have my plans to get more, and so on and so on. And then, poof, Hiranyakashipu was extinguished. powerful, big controller, etc. And, you know, small Brahmikashipus or persons that are not mindful of the fact. So the removal of the covering of ignorance is important for restoring our Krishna consciousness. And that means recognizing we're not the proprietor, we're not the enjoyer. Someone else is the proprietor, someone else is the enjoyer. And that's the supreme. Not only for me, but for all beings. The energy of the Lord is called avidya. The bewildering factor of the conditioned soul. Material nature is called avidya, or ignorance. But to the devotees of the Lord, engaged in pure devotional service, this energy becomes vidya, or pure knowledge. Same energy. Just, what's the difference? Here's the difference. The regard that one has for the Supreme Lord. And seeing that energy in relation to the Supreme Lord, it's an inspiration. How wonderful is my Lord? And if one is forgetful of that relationship, it has a covering influence, a darkening influence. But the example that Prabhupada gave is so simple. When you look towards the sun, what do you see? Do you light? Turn your back to your sun, what do you see? You see shadow. And there's not some third in between thing. So, how you regard the Supreme, similarly, is illuminating. And then the dravya, the substance, the stuff, you see the hand of the Lord. Well, the potential is there to see the hand of the Lord, the invisible hand. The ownership and controllership of the Supreme Lord that moves things through his instrument of time. And that is illuminating. Like, you know, to see things in relation to God. Or events. Or even something just like, you know, how Krishna supplied the intelligence to the devotees that made fiberglass drums. You know, the Lord supplied the ingredients, he supplied the inspiration, he supplied everything. And here it is. Very nice. How wonderful is Krishna? How wonderful is the devotee that figured out how to do it, but how wonderful is Krishna who gave that ability and the intelligence of that devotee? And that's just one of the modes of nature. And there's, you know, the ingredients. Another mode of nature. Intelligence, creativity, and the ingredients. Without which you don't have events. You have stuff. The energy of the Lord transforms from Mahamaya to Yogamaya and appears to pure devotees in her real feature. That's the statement that this appears from in Bhagavad Gita. What does Krishna say? That those that are not my devotees cannot see me. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita mudhoyam nabhijanati. Have you ever wondered why Krishna uses that term yoga maya in reference to persons that are averse to him, can't see him because of his yoga maya? I used to puzzle over that. Like, that's mahamaya. When you can't see Krishna because you have an attitude problem towards him, he reserves the right to not disclose himself. He conceals himself through the agency of his Mahamaya. But the term that's used is Yogamaya. Na aham prakasha, I am not manifest. Sarvasya, for all living entities who are averse to him. Yogamaya samavrita, by the agency of my yogamaya potency. We're conventionally, in our ISKCON speak, that's like Krishna's pastimes are conducted by his yogamaya potency. By his yogamaya potency, Mother Jasoda, when she's looking inside Krishna's mouth to see if he's eaten dirt, and she sees the whole cosmic manifestation inside Krishna's mouth. And then she becomes bewildered. What's going on here? Then Krishna covers her by his yogamaya potency. He shows and he conceals by his internal potency. But his internal potency can act as external potency if he so desires effortlessly, just like that. Doesn't even take that, just effortlessly. And he's converting one energy into another energy. A very nice example, superlative example, is in Krishna's appearance. When the seventh child of Devaki is in the womb of Devaki, Krishna calls Yogamaya. She's very happy. Yes, some service. What is it? Anything. Just say it. That's a very difficult service for you. This seventh child of Devaki, that's Balaram. That's my brother. And I want you to transfer Balaram from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. Don't worry. He's heavy, but I'll give you the strength. Next service. You then make your appearance in the womb of Yashoda. And I'm going to appear as the eighth child of Devaki. And after I'm born, it's like the game plan. I'm going to ask Vasudev to carry me to the side of Yashoda. We'll both be born in the same night. And he'll place me by the side of Yashoda, and he'll bring you back to the side of Devaki. Kamsa won't know what happened. Vasudev and Devaki will know what happened, but Kamsa won't know. And he'll come and try to kill you. Don't worry. No problem. He won't be able to kill you. You're my potency. He can't kill you. And after he fails to do that, you'll go here and there throughout the land and you'll be known by various names such as Durga, Kali, etc. and so forth and so on. External energy. He's speaking to Yogamaya, saying because persons that are not Krishna's devotees, how are they going to see his energy? Something that's to be enjoyed. So she'll take on the shadow feature or the Maya feature. Yogamaya can become Mahamaya. And Mahamaya can become Yogamaya. Because it's Krishna's energy, like Prabhupada gives the example, electrician can take electricity and make heat or make cold. One energy. Because he's an expert, he's an electrician. He knows how to heating and cooling. Which one do you want? And so Krishna is saying like that to us. Which one do you want? My internal potency or my external potency? It's one energy, but it's how you regard me. That's going to be what it's going to be. That's what's being described here. The energy of the Lord transforms from Mahamaya to Yogamaya and appears to pure devotees in her real feature. One can see, like Prabhupada said, when you are a pure devotee, you don't just see a tree, you see Krishna there. What does that mean? I've heard Ravindra Saruprabhu lecture on this like 20 times. It's really, because he's such a wonderful lecturer. He was philosophy religion major or something. And when he read that in Prabhupada's books, he was pondering, like, you know, you look out the window, you see Krishna, 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 just like Krishna. Is that what it means? Does it mean that you see this is the energy of Krishna? And it's like, you know, an intellectual adjustment? Is that what it means? He didn't supply the answer. Because it takes Krishna consciousness. But it, certainly you see all things in relation to Krishna. All things. And you see all things in relation to Krishna and you're reminded of Krishna. Prabhupada gives this example to explain what he means. Sometimes, it's not so common anymore, but sometimes people keep little baby shoes. I mean, it used to be a thing that they would hang the baby shoes from their rearview mirror. Now it's CDs and other kinds of, you know, yucky things hanging from their rearview mirror in their car. But they see the shoes of their child, and they see their child. It's not like, you know, the same as they see their child hanging from the string on the rearview mirror. But their thought goes to their child. Their feelings go to their child. In their mind's eye, they see their child. Just by seeing the shoes. The baby shoes. Similarly, Prabhupada said, when you are a pure devotee, whatever you see Krishna, because that something that you see reminds you of Krishna. You see Krishna. Like that. Whatever that is. Now, in superlatively advanced stage, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would see Krishna. He saw a sand dune and he thought of Vrindavan, Govardhan Hill. He saw Krishna and he ran to embrace Krishna and he fainted on the ground unconscious. Overwhelmed with ecstasy of meeting Krishna, embracing Krishna. Or the Jagannath Vallabh Gardens in Puri. He thought he saw Krishna amongst the trees in the garden. And he ran toward Krishna and Krishna disappeared. But then he smelled the fragrance of Krishna. He was trying to find Krishna through the fragrance of Krishna. He was going mad in ecstasy. All day long. Searching for Krishna. So, back to the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Maitreya is describing, and purports Prabhupada is elucidating, these different types of creation. And there's different, the ingredients, the senses, the sense objects, the deities controlling the senses, all these things are part of what Lord Vishnu does. At least, you know, the subtle forms of these things, so that Brahma can work with them, so he can do his sub-creation. I'll read this sentence one more time. The energy of the Lord transforms from Mahamaya to Yogamaya and appears to pure devotees in her real feature. The material nature, therefore, appears to function in three phases. Notice the modes of nature as I read this. As the creative principle of the material world, as ignorance, and as knowledge. So within creation you have these three, and then they mix. So there's the creative principle, that's what Brahma is endowed with. Creative impetus. Srishti. The impetus for creation. Srishti Shakti. Lord Brahma is empowered with Srishti Shakti. He's a Shaktivesha avatar as well as a Guna avatar. He is endowed with the Lord's Srishti Shakti, his potency to create. So the creative potency, that's one. Ignorance, that's been described in the previous section of avidya, is ignorance. Vidya is knowledge. Avidya is ignorance. Krishna creates that. It's like you can't have ignorance without Krishna creating it. It's a potency that covers the living entity. Without the potency, avidya shakti, without ignorance, you don't have material activity. So if you can get free from ignorance, you don't have material activity anymore. You have spiritual activity. You have activity, but spiritual activity. That's the difference. When in full consciousness of Krishna for Krishna's pleasure, then you have spiritual activity. And knowledge, the mode of goodness. As disclosed in the previous verse, in the fourth creation, the power of knowledge is created. The conditioned souls are not originally fools, but by the influence of the avidya function of material nature, they are made fools. And thus they are unable to utilize knowledge in the proper channel. Last paragraph. By the influence of darkness, the conditioned soul forgets his relationship with the Supreme Lord and is overwhelmed by attachment, hatred, pride, ignorance, and false identification, the five kinds of illusion that cause material bondage. End of purport. And the next verse, the next section, then Brahma starts doing his thing. But he has to have these components to do his thing. Just as we have to have, or we can't. But Lord Vishnu is being very merciful. And for the living entities that want to try Mission Impossible, enjoying apart from him, here's the program. The statement made by Maitreya was there's nine kinds of sargas and he only gets through five. Stay tuned and see if he gets the other four. Six. Okay, I tried to make it a little entertaining. And it's Krishna consciousness at least 201. Because the 101 is Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, these eight separated energies, and aside from that, there's the soul, and I'm the controller of both. Matter, spirit, the controller of both. That's creation. So now it's going a little more deeply. Now, besides those eight, here's how those eight come into being. And then when you have those five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, then there's another five, and another five, and another five. There's from the elements, there's knowledge acquiring senses and working senses. And then there's the objects of the knowledge acquiring senses. That's three more sets of five. So when you add 15 and 8, what do you get? 23. So the Samkhya philosophy has 24. There's one more. And that's citta. That's translated in different ways. Sometimes it's translated as contaminated consciousness. And sometimes it's translated as the sum total of the material ingredients, like, you know, the warehouse. And so there's Krishna's system and there's Kapila's system. Krishna's system has 8. Kapila's system has 24. It's just further delineation of the 5, makes another 5, 5, 5, and then contaminated consciousness, or the sum total. And then the fun begins. There's living entities, that's 25. And there's time. And there's 26, and then it's romper room. It's material activity. And, you know, supervising the whole thing is the Supreme Lord, who brings into being Lord Brahma. Let's just go back a little bit, because it's important and it's also very nice. It's describing the period of the night of Brahma, where Lord Vishnu is in, Garbhadakshay Vishnu is in mystic slumber. But he's not snoring. He's not dreaming. He's in yoga nidra. He's fully conscious because there's no ignorance, there's no sleep. Sleep is an influence of ignorance. He's supremely conscious. In fact, specifically says his eyes are open, although he appears to be in this yoga nidra dreamlike state. And he's not influenced by time. Time is directed by him. And the time energy is moving. And the time energy moves in such a way that the unmanifest state, like a little bell rings, okay, it's time for creation again. Brahma's alarm just went off as his morning. And because the time energy is acting on the material elements, from his navel appears a bluish bud. Bluish because of the sins of the living entities. The energy that's needed for Lord Brahma's creation starts to appear in the form of a blue bud that continues to grow as a stem, and on top of the stem is a lotus, and on top of the lotus is Lord Brahma. Doesn't say where Lord Brahma is during his night, but it does describe what I just said. And then Lord Brahma looks in all four directions. Where am I? What am I? What is my purpose? What am I to do? Who am I? Etc. And so he uses his reasoning faculty. He says, aha, there's a lotus. There must be a stem. Hey, look at that, there's a stem. If I climb down the stem, I'll find out where the stem came from, then I can find out where I came from. Very reasonable. Then he uses his sense inspection. He's climbing down the stem, and down the stem, and down the stem, and down the stem. He can't find the end of the stem. Then he realizes, I'm not going to find out the source of my existence this way, by reason, or by sense perception. Going to have to use another method. He goes back up the stem and sits on the lotus flower, and he engages in tapa. His tapa is chanting of his mantra. He chants his mantra. Lord Vishnu appears and discloses who he is and what is in everything. It's not metaphorical language to help us understand what we should do. It's literal. And as we should follow Lord Brahma, and as Lord Brahma does, we should learn from his self-inquisitiveness and so on in this process of understanding what are our duties and how to execute them in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so any discussion? According to what Kapila Dev says, is these material elements dissolve through the agency of pure devotion. What a relief, huh? So, the beginning is neglect, and instead act on spiritual conception. Matras Parshas to Kauntaya Sitoshna Sukadu Pada Agama Payonichas Tamsa Tiksha Subharata. These things that just arise from sense perception to our dear friend, the agency of false ego, you tolerate them. That your question was with relationship. You don't identify with it, rather you tolerate it. You don't invest consciousness purposefully. You withdraw consciousness from and place consciousness in the spiritual conception and act as your capacity permits you in spiritual conception and continue to strive in that way, and eventually the material elements dissolve. The subtle material elements and then the gross material elements. So the spiritual conception can prevail. Because there is a real, ego means sense of self, there is a real sense of self. The beginning is aham brahmasmi, I'm spirit, not matter. And then you can keep going, as spirit, what am I to do? Serve Krishna. That's another spiritual conception. Okay, I like serving Krishna. Now, then it continues. In what way am I naturally suited for serving Krishna? There's the modes of nature kind of idea, but there's also, you'll hear this evening, there's a spiritual sense of one's nature. But that isn't going to awaken while it's covered by the material sense through false ego and the modes of nature. But when Krishna consciousness awakens, it's not like the world stops being the world, but the modes stop conditioning. And they do so through the agency of false ego. But so there has to be a service conception of self, service of Krishna. And that service of Krishna has its place in all the things of life. Because, like this is described, avidya potency acts as vidya potency. The opportunity for serving Krishna in terms of stuff. Career, family, social. Serving Krishna. He's at the center. Then it's dissolved. The material influence. Yes.
Brahma was the creator of all manifestations.
Yeah.
But we all in our lives are these many creators. We create
yes.
things.
Yes, we do.
So what should be the core of learning from Brahma's
actions? I like that you read the prayers and they're very beautiful. But I gave the essence of what his prayers were. The example he set was before he went to the office, he did these three things. And because he did them with pure devotion, and then the Lord says, "You pleased me, you have control of your senses." So like it wasn't just a platitude, it was, you know, you have the capacity to carry this out, I give you the power to do these three things. There's details. Like one of the details is how to overcome pride. It's really nuts. Anybody here would like to overcome pride? Maybe you don't have any. Exact language is important, but I don't know how long it would take to find the exact language. Here we go. It's speaks of seeing material nature as my energy. It's not just your ability comes from Krishna, but everything comes from Krishna. When you see that your ability and the stuff around you comes from this energetic source, what's there to be proud of? It's not yours, and you didn't do it. You can be an instrument. You can try to, you know, I'm an instrument. Let's see if I can find it for later, for tomorrow morning or something. Exact language. So, in this little section, the it's an exchange between Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma, but we can learn about our service to Krishna or Lord Vishnu from that exchange. It fits. We're not going to create a universe, we're going to do something. But the elements of how to carry out your day-to-day life activities in Krishna consciousness, it's all impacted, embedded in that description. You know, the circle is small or the circle is big, but it's, you know, something, we're going to do something. And how to be in Krishna consciousness when we do something. Yes.
My dad just from the purport we read today, and then previously this last couple weeks, I've been thinking, appreciating how much detail is given, and how much the acharyas have given so many nice details that help us understand things clearly. then I was kind of reflecting, and you must know a lot better than I, so I might be wrong in my perception, but I'm noticing that maybe because of the dynamics of the movements are becoming more where people are working full-time and things like that, that there's both little time and little attraction for studying the Shastras, I've seen. So how can we... It's almost like, you know, after a long day of work, we're so tired that I just want to chant my rounds and go to sleep, and that's all I can do. But it seems like the Acharyas are so particular about understanding not just the generals of the knowledge, but all the intricacies and the details. Like Prabhupada says in his book, that he gives the five reasons that we have material bondage, you know, like all these really nice details. So how is it that we can not only become attracted, but and also create this... you know, connection with the Shastra and such a thing.
I got the question. Get up early in the morning and do it. Fix your Krishna consciousness. First thing, it's, you know this answer, but you're just giving me something to talk about. And if you do that, then it sets the day. And if it sets your day and you're in Krishna consciousness during the day, then when you return, you're not feeling beaten. You're feeling, before I take rest, I want to connect again. I want to hear something. And you can do it if you're like, you know, if circumstances permit. You can purposefully do it at intervals during the day. One devotee that was a kirtan leader on Harinam, his name was Lini Kumar, he used to carry a bag with him, and I don't know at what intervals of time, but periodically he just stopped whatever he was doing and pull out his Bhagavad Gita and read, you know, for a few minutes, close his book, meditate on what he read, and put his book back in his bag. And carry on. So, you know, at work or wherever one is, if one can, if it's possible, if one is, you know, not going to get fired because of it, take a little, you know, fix your mind and Krishna break. It actually will make you more productive, more peaceful, and a better, you know, person at work. So, but the first most important thing is what I said. It's like, here's your day, and you know the metaphor, the big rock goes in first. There's the glass jar, and here's the big rock. Put that in first. And then the other rocks, and the other pebbles, and the other stones, and the sand, and thank God they go in later. Don't do it backwards. Put that in first. And however much, whatever time permits, people, busy lives and all that, whatever, it goes in first. Just in principle. And then it will grow. Not a static rock. You do it steadily, it will grow. It'll grow and you find, because it's proper to do so, something in the evening, and then in intervals, it can work like that. But none of that happens without the commitment to do so. And if there's a commitment to do so, it'll happen. And then comes all the abbots. But you know, with the commitment, the abbots disappear. Yeah. Commitment. Or just, you know, the instruction. But instruction can be there without commitment. It's not going to happen. Receive the instruction and carry the instruction and make it happen. Not by your power, but by empowerment. It will happen. One thing that's universal, we don't like pain.
Sorry?
We don't like pain. We don't like to suffer. So, supposing somebody is complacent and they don't make the commitment, and it doesn't happen. They suffer. We don't like to suffer. So that's another impetus. Pain. You know, better is goodness to be done. So that's something that helps frame your life in the quality of goodness. It makes it easier to be committed and stay committed in the quality of goodness. But, you know, the stage of unsteady bhakti or anishtata bhakti is common. It's how things begin. Before there's steadiness, there's unsteadiness. And just keep committing. Even if there's a tumble, you like some time passes and oh, get up, commit, keep persevering. Anything else? Yes.
After the Lord Brahma's prayers, Krishna is talking about. Brahma is, don't be anxious or depressed in the matter of creation. The work you already desire is already blessed by me. So, how can we really understand, like we might have a vision, like, you know, this is what is, we might not have a total picture right away. So, is it just by keep on doing and Krishna reveals?
Well, before we do something, we should know that Krishna wants it. That's like best. Somebody was just asking me this question. What about if you don't know what Krishna wants, but if, you know, so you're like looking for some indication of what Krishna wants and the indication is not clear. Oh, even Krishna may be giving it, it's not clear, and time passes, and then that indecision is itself a decision. And things start happening, just like, you know, whether it, you don't know whether it's right or wrong or good or bad, it's just like happening because we're procrastinating or waiting for some indication from Krishna to what to do. So indecision is another decision. Waiting, we can decide, let me be patient and wait. But time doesn't wait. Things start to happen. So, you know, even some dormant period, then things will happen. Cycles of time will come. So, as best we can, we want Krishna at the steering column, and we're in the, you know, passenger or backseat or something, you know, just serving him according to indication that he wants. And through guru, sadhu, and Shastra, we can, if we're very sincere and want Krishna's indication, something will come, and we're not like really clear, we'll act cautiously and see if that's what Krishna wants. Staying open to Guru Sadhu Shastra. Quotes that I was reading last night, Prabhupada spoke in one of them very clearly. You stay in that position and Krishna will give you intelligence. It's like, that's trusting in Krishna. And I like, I don't have intelligence. I don't have the capacity. But Krishna has the capacity, he can bestow it. Who bestows it unto is Tesham Siddhata Yuktanam Vrajatam Priti Purvakam. That's where we have to pay attention. Trying to serve Krishna with genuine love and devotion, even in unclear circumstances. Carrying that desire, cherishing that desire, and looking for Krishna's indication through the medium of Guru Sadhu Shastra. If we carry that desire, even the action that we take may not be precisely what Krishna wanted. Krishna will be pleased because of that desire and redirect it. Mahajanogena katha sapanta. The example that we know from the great personalities, not imitating, but we take from that example.
Brahma having a desire himself to create?
Oh, yes.
Or that is given by Krishna? No.
Oh, he has a desire which is given by Krishna. Here's... Oh, Brahma, the prayers that you have chanted, this is text 38, the prayers that you have chanted, praising the glories of my transcendental activities, the penances you have undertaken to understand me, and your firm faith in me, all these are to be considered my causeless mercy. Dear Brahma, nothing is ours. But he's given him the best because of his sincere effort to please the Lord. So that's where our attention has, even if we're not, we may not be clear. Why? Tesham satati yuktanam bhajatam purvakam tadami buddhiyam gantam enamabhubhiyam. Anything? You have something?
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Sometimes, most of the time we say, this answer, if Krishna wants it, it will happen, so why do we need to worry? sometimes without putting our effort, we'll say, Krishna wants it, it will happen, and then we'll just...
I have. It's true. There's truth. If Krishna wants it to happen, it will happen. But Krishna, let's say Krishna wants so many Prabhupada's books to be distributed. It will happen. Krishna wants transcendental knowledge and love of God to flood Minneapolis. Well, if he wants it to happen, it will happen. But there's an instrument. Nimitta matram bhavya savya sachin. So there's something we need to do. Our effort alone isn't going to make it happen. If Krishna wants it to happen, our effort can be, if Krishna so desires, empowered. And it may even be that Krishna wants it to happen, but he wants our sincerity to be 100%, not 10%, or 50%, 100%. It may not happen right away. But so some endeavor is required. The lesson of the Damodara Lila is two things, Prayasa and Kripa. Mother Yashoda wanting divine Krishna, Krishna giving his mercy. These two things in any spiritual undertaking must be there. The effort of devotion and Krishna's mercy. It's not just Krishna's mercy. It's with the sentence that the verse I just read, even our sincere desire to serve, that's Krishna's mercy. But we still have something to do, a sincere desire to serve, and some endeavor to serve. Okay. Shiva Prabhupada ki jai.
Shiva Prabhupada Swami ki jai.